Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about bipartisan support for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, COVID-19, and the likelihood of a future electricity blackout from Northwestern Energy. It's Thursday, March 5th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A blockage in a sewer pipe led to an overflow of raw sewage near a ski run at the Big Sky Resort in southern Montana. The Billings Gazette reported about 62,000 gallons of sewage seeped into about 4 feet of snow on Thursday. The sewage never reached the middle fork of the West Fork of the Gallatin River, but water samples were taken from the stream above and below the spill for testing. Water district officials say the 15-inch sewer pipe was blocked by debris accumulating on a lodged stainless steel strap, which was later removed. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality was notified of the spill. The expanding COVID-19 outbreak has scrubbed Missoula's 17th annual Heart Expo, slated for this weekend at Providence St. Patrick Hospital. The event draws over 1,000 people each year from the Northwest wanting to learn more about cardiac health. Cardiac surgeons, imaging experts, nurses, and researchers from the International Heart Institute of Montana appear at the event to provide demonstrations and lecture on the latest advances in treating heart disease. Providence spokesperson Joanne Hoven says Saturday's Heart Expo was postponed out of, quote, an abundance of caution to our community members, patients, and caregivers surrounding the transmission of coronavirus/COVID-19, end quote. Providence says the expo will be rescheduled at a later date. Fall funding for a federal purse that supports local conservation projects seems a step closer to reality. Nikki Ouellette reports a bipartisan group of U.S. senators yesterday announced presidential support for a bill to fully and permanently fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund and address the maintenance backlog for the country's national parks.
The Trump administration's proposed budget last month earmarked just shy of $15 million for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That's down 97% from the $495 million Congress approved last year. But in an apparent change of heart this week, the president publicly signaled his support for the fund in a tweet that lauded U.S. Senators Steve Daines of Montana and Cory Gardner of Colorado, both Republicans up for re-election this year. Daines said he and Gardner met with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump last week to push for the conservation measures.
And in fact, Cory and I both shared pictures from Colorado and Montana. The president was taken aback. There we go. And he was taken aback by the beauty of our states and what the Land and Water Conservation Fund, as well as our national parks, do. And it was a great moment. He committed to doing it.
Montana Senator John Tester, a Democrat, says he's advocated for the fund for a decade and will be an original co-sponsor on the forthcoming legislation.
Because every day that goes by, we're losing ecosystems in this country. These are ecosystems that our kids could enjoy 100 years from now, but will be gone. And once they're gone forever. So getting this to $900 million is quite frankly a no-brainer for the Land and Water Conservation Fund because there are so many places to use those dollars.
Language of the standalone legislation is expected to closely resemble two bills introduced last year. Both had broad bipartisan support in the Senate and House, but stalled. The new bill is expected to authorize $6.5 billion over the next 5 years to address some $12 billion worth of backlog National Park Service maintenance projects. It would also permanently mandate $900 million annually for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which uses tax revenue from offshore oil and gas development to pay for local parks and access to public lands. Daines says he expects the bill to be introduced by the end of the week, with floor action by April. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
The New York Times is reporting Governor Steve Bullock is poised to run for the U.S. Senate in Montana. Montana Public Radio has not independently confirmed the details. The Times reports that three Democratic officials say Bullock could reverse himself and run for the office in a challenge to incumbent Republican Steve Daines. Bullock ran for president last year. At the time, he told Montana Public Radio's Sally Mock he'd ruled out a run for the U.S. Senate.
If your presidential race falters, would you consider at some point the Senate race?
No, I wouldn't.
However, state and national Democrats have continued to pressure the term-limited governor to run. High-ranking Democrats, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and former President Barack Obama, met with Bullock in the last month. His entrance into the race would make him the sixth Democrat mounting a challenge to Daines and the likely favorite to win the primary June 2nd. Daines sent out an email to fundraisers yesterday asking for donations following the report that Bullock could enter the race. Time is running out for Bullock to announce. The filing deadline is next Monday. There are still no confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Montana. Experts, however, expect that will change. Public health and emergency services officials statewide are standing up command teams to lead the response to a potential coronavirus outbreak. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports from the Garden City.
The Missoula City County Health Department is preparing for the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 the same way communities prepare for wildfire or flood emergencies. A working incident command team is in place. A telephone hotline at 258-3898, staffed with live operators, is now fielding calls from Missoulians with questions about the disease or wanting to report suspicious symptoms. Health officials, schools, hospitals, and emergency responders are now coordinating and communicating on a daily basis.
So we've actually been working on this for about a month in the background, even though we haven't actually been out in the public eye.
Cindy Farr supervises the Missoula Health Department's Infectious Disease Office and is the local COVID-19 incident commander.
But the trigger for really ramping things up was when we started seeing an increase in cases over in Washington State.
Farr and her colleagues Wednesday briefed the Missoula City Council's Public Safety and Health Committee. Farr says Missoula County gets an annual emergency preparedness state grant worth about $160,000. Those funds are being used for this unfolding coronavirus incident in a variety of ways, including new hires.
Right now, we're starting off looking for 3 full-time people to work in the call center and 2 additional full-time public health nurses. That could change as the need changes, but we're just going to start off with that right now.
Como News in Washington State reports 12 of 30 firefighters and police officers in Kirkland who are quarantined after exposure to the COVID-19 virus are now showing flu-like symptoms. Missoula City Fire Assistant Chief of Operations Brad Davis.
There is a little bit of unknown. We're relying on our 911 dispatch center to ask appropriate questions as they receive calls based on the symptoms of the caller to give us a heads up if it's a potential case where we should be taking precautions or not. And then other than that, just using our judgment upon our assessment if we need to take universal precautions and mask up and put on the appropriate PPE.
PPE stands for Personal Protective Equipment. Missoula health official Cindy Farr says most sickened by COVID-19 get a cough and feel crummy for a couple of weeks. Those at highest risk suffer underlying respiratory conditions and or are at least 60 years old. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Across the state, Kay Erickson of YPR News reports the Magic City is taking similar measures.
They're the Unified Health Command. They'll lead the response when the coronavirus comes to Yellowstone County. Representatives from Riverstone Health, the Billings Clinic, St. Vincent Healthcare, and Yellowstone County's Disaster and Emergency Services have been planning for complex community-wide health events like this for nearly 20 years, says John Felton, Yellowstone County's public health officer.
We all know each other. We've worked together a long time. We're used to working together. And we can fairly readily move into a shared management of a complex situation.
Quick response is important with the coronavirus that causes the COVID-19 illness. That's because it's a novel virus, very new, and there is no immunity to it. Yellowstone County's Unified Command has begun conserving healthcare facility supplies like masks and gloves. It set up a public health information hotline and is establishing response relationships with the state health and emergency services departments. The members of UHC also have what are called pandemic flu plans, hospital-specific blueprints outlining how to respond when a lot of people get very sick.
Hospitals don't build a huge amount of excess capacity. And so what the question is, what would we do if there was a very large number of very severe cases that had to be hospitalized? And the pandemic flu plans provide at least a blueprint for that. I think the fact that this is such a fluid situation prevents saying, like, this is absolutely what would happen. And I understand that people really want certainty, they want surety. That's not really the world we live in, but we're also not starting from scratch.
Belton says one of the instances when the county activated its Unified Health Command protocol was back in 2014-2016 in response to a potential Ebola outbreak. Felton urges everyone to be proactive with their health, wash hands frequently, use a hand sanitizer that's 60% alcohol, cover your cough, stay home if you're sick, and stay away from people who are ill.
I think it's important for people to be vigilant, but also be confident that everything that can be done to be ready for whatever happens is being undertaken.
I'm Kay Erickson with Yellowstone Public Radio News.
County health departments in Montana report having public health emergency preparedness plans in place to deal with any medical situation that may arise. The state's largest utility has warned the public about the potential likelihood of an electricity blackout while talking about how it intends to build up its energy portfolio. As Kayla DeRoche reports, a 2019 analysis shows the region could face potential shortages as coal-fired power plants retire in the coming years, but doesn't factor in new power projects likely to come online.
At an Economic Outlook seminar in Billings last month, Northwestern Energy's Vice President for Energy Supply, John Hines, mentioned a study a Regional Energy Council released last year
that said there's now a 25% chance of a blackout because there's insufficient electricity available to serve our customers by 2026.
Northwestern has used the term blackout multiple times when talking to a public audience about its 20-year plan for sourcing energy. Hines referenced the same Northwest Power and Conservation Council study at a teleconference in December. That's when Northwestern fielded questions about its intention to buy an added share of the Colstrip coal-fired power plant.
There was an article saying that the region is now facing a 26% probability of a blackout between now and 2026. And folks, that issue for Northwestern, because of our shortage, is even that much more severe.
The utility, which serves about 380,000 electric customers in Montana, has said it relies too much on buying energy on the open market. It's used the 26% chance of blackout statistic to illustrate the seriousness of its need to build out its infrastructure and increase its self-made energy. The number is a worst-case scenario loss of load projection from the Northwest Power and Conservation Council's Supply Adequacy Assessment for 2024. The council, an Oregon-based governmentally established group that looks out for the energy interests of Montana, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, makes annual resource adequacy projections 5 years out to give utilities time to acquire new resources. The assessment explores different scenarios where, if coal plants retire as expected in coming years and no new power supply sources come online, the region's loss of load probability could grow to 8% in 2024 and 17% in 2026. Council analyst Ben Quila says a utility's power supply can only be deemed adequate if it's at or below a loss of load probability of 5%.
So it can look pretty stark when you look at the adequacy assessment. But I don't think the next 5 years we're going to see utilities just sit on their hands and do nothing. And that's pretty close to the world that the adequacy assessment describes.
Quila says the loss of load probability is the likelihood of a power supply shortfall. It factors in customer energy needs, system capacity, and historical data to figure out how probable it is that demand will overrun capacity during a certain time period. He says the council models a range of loss of load probabilities based on announced or possible major power plant closures. Its projections do not include additional infrastructure or energy resources that utilities plan to add or may add.
I think there are a lot of people building new resources and looking at how they can plan for this transition. But this is definitely a signal that we need to be intent, we need to be careful, and we need to look at what are our alternatives and and keep a close eye on the situation as things develop.
The assessment says the region faces the 26% loss of probability Northwestern has mentioned if coal plants in Wyoming and Montana retire on an earlier schedule. That includes Jim Bridger 1, which operator PacifiCorp recently proposed retiring by the end of 2023. However, the report says if the Jim Bridger 1 coal plant stays online, the potential for loss of load may only reach 17% by 2026. On the other hand, possible early retirements of the Jim Bridger 2 plant in 2028 and Colstrip Units 3 and 4 as early as 2027 could cost the region another 1,700 megawatts of capacity. Quila says the bigger the shortfall between energy on hand versus customer demand, the more likely a utility would have a situation that would lead to a power cutoff or blackout.
But drawing the actual line of, okay, when you cross this line, this definitely gets us to a blackout, we don't have that information. It would be pure speculation.
Quila says utilities can address loss of load without causing a blackout. Northwestern Energy's John Hines in the past has used the term synonymously at public events, but explained his use of the word blackout to YPR in more depth.
My definition is pretty simple, not having enough electricity to serve our customers at any point in time.
Hines said if Northwestern doesn't have enough supply to serve customers during cold weather, it would take customers it's not obligated to serve offline, often businesses or larger customers that have signed up for interruptible service in exchange for a lower rate.
And then if we still had insufficient electricity, we would try to rotate blackouts across our service territory so no particular locale would be affected for a very long time.
Northwestern warns its customers that if it doesn't build out its infrastructure, the utility may see energy insecurity like this in the next few years, although it hasn't yet faced a regional loss of load in Montana. Colstrip United, a coal advocacy group out of Colstrip in eastern Montana, has taken Northwestern's blackout warnings to heart. The group helped organize a January listening session on Northwestern's 20-year plan for sourcing energy. Colstrip residents like Jonathan Logan aired concern about the chance of losing consistent energy.
Whenever the rolling blackouts are going to start because the grid's unstable, who do you think they're going to cut off power to? Let's look at California. It's Northern California and Southern California where no one lives. That stuff's getting cut off. Not the big cities. So really think about that. In the end, whenever the power starts getting cut, who's going to be one of the first states on the chopping block? It's going to be us.
Northwestern Energy's 20-year plan points to oil and gas as the cheapest and most reliable way to provide ratepayers energy in Montana. Meanwhile, some environmental advocacy groups, like the Montana Environmental Information Center, call Northwestern's use of the term blackout a scare tactic. YPR spoke with Brian Fady, MEIC's Clean Energy Program Director.
What's your take on the likelihood of a loss of load in the state?
Just looking at the resource plans, you know, these 20-year resource plans for all of the other utilities in the region, no one is using the same language that Northwestern is using. All of the other utilities in the region, we're talking Puget Sound Energy, Portland General Electric, Avista, PacifiCorp, Idaho Power, are all being rather calm, and I would say just normal in their operations here, planning for building new resources, each of them are, and each of them are including new clean energy resources, wind energy, solar energy, energy efficiency that they plan to acquire in the near term and the long term. And Northwestern is really just the outlier here with both the language that they're using, which seems rather extreme these days, and with their own resource plan for the next 20 years.
What are the takeaways that you want people to keep in mind when they're looking at the likelihood of a blackout or loss of load probability?
I think everyone agrees. We all want affordable, reliable energy. You know, we have to start from that position because there's just unanimous agreement on that. And so you just have to answer the question, how do you provide affordable, reliable energy? And you know, the problem here just, again, seems to be that Northwestern is trying to tell Montanans one thing when every other utility in the region is saying something different.
That was Brian Fady, Clean Energy Program Director with advocacy group Montana Environmental Information Center. Environmental groups like MEIC maintain that Montana will sink its energy future even further by relying on coal-fired power over renewable energy. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.